Eric by Dave Baldwin.
I suppose that looking back, it was a strange relationship. I mean, from my point of view, I never really thought so at the time, but then I never really thought anything about anything at the time. I always accepted that the arrangement was unusual and strange to others, but for me personally, it was a simple, logical and economic arrangement. I mean, two middle-aged men living together under the same roof is unusual, but not strange, if you see what I mean. I think a lot of people thought that we must be homosexuals. I mean, no one ever said anything, and in a way, their silence said everything. If any topic of conversation had any reference to homosexuality, gay people, or the current preoccupation with the LGBT community, our friends would go to a great length to steer the conversation away from the topic or detach themselves from the discussion. Eric found it amusing. I did suggest to him that we really ought to say outright that we were not gay and that living in the same house was a mere matter of convenience. But he'd had none of it. He insisted that any denial from us would only serve to further support their idea that we were a couple. And anyway, he found the whole thing highly amusing. He did take every opportunity to steer the conversation towards the dreaded subject and revel in their discomfort. And I suppose that in itself said quite a lot about Eric. He was very much his own man. Whilst most of us spend quite a lot of our waking time behaving in a way which we feel will conform to what others might think of us, Eric took little heed of what anyone might think of him. He projected an air of total openness, wearing his heart on his sleeve, so to speak. I don't mean to suggest that he was a shallow personality. No. That would be quite wrong. It would be more accurate to say that he had an air of innocence. Naivety, perhaps. I think that most people found it quite engaging. I first met Eric at a friend's house. My good friend Tim was celebrating his 50th birthday and invited a few friends to his house for dinner. One such friend was George, who felt disinclined to accept the invitation and leave his newfound lodger alone in the house for an evening. "Bring him along," said Tim. So George did, and we all got to meet Eric. Looking back on that evening, I had a very strong overall first impression of Eric. If I had to describe that impression in a single word, that word would be confident. Yeah, most people arriving for a dinner party, knowing just one of the 10 or so guests, would stay close to that one person and remain in the background whilst becoming better acquainted with the others. This was not Eric's style at all. He joined our company with the air of a visiting celebrity. Introducing himself as George's friend, he burst upon the scene in a flurry of warmth and good humour, greeting everyone like a long-lost friend. By the end of the evening, we all felt that he was indeed a friend, and that he'd livened up the evening admirably with his interesting conversation and general good humour. He seemed well-read and widely travelled, with a fund of interesting stories on many topics, setting countries throughout Europe, Africa and South America. His father had been a colonel in the British Army, so Eric had been educated in schools wherever his father was based. He came back to England to complete his education at Cambridge, where he graduated with an honours degree in the classics. Then, in keeping with all students of the classics, he turned his back on Sophocles and Plato and trained to be an airline pilot. So, at the end of a 10-year contract with Kenya Airways, he sold his home in Nairobi and returned to the homeland, where he hopes to acquire a house, a job, a wife, and children. In that order. Yes, Eric Carter has his life planned and organised. Because he was currently looking for the right house, he'd taken up temporary residence with George, who he'd met socially. With such social skills, Eric would surely never lack a place to stay. However, George's job as a civil engineer now demands that he relocate to Scotland. So, with his house here in Kent on the market, it seems likely that Eric's 3 months' stay with George would shortly come to an end. So, where would Eric stay then? Well, my own terraced house was tiny, but since I was the only occupant, I had a spare room, and it would seem unfriendly to turn my back on such a character as Eric. So, there we have it. I went to a dinner party with a bottle of wine and came back with Eric Carter. So, Eric moved in on the Monday evening. I say moved in as if he had a van full of furniture, but it was just a suitcase with some clothes and a few personal effects. He said that his furniture was in store in Nairobi and that he'd ship it back when he'd found a house. Eric spent a great deal of time viewing houses. In 4 months, he must have viewed just about every available three-bedroom detached house within a 30-mile radius. All of them were either too small, too large, too noisy, too rural, too old, or too new. Whilst Eric was forever apologising for his extended stay, it was really no problem for me. He usually ate out at restaurants and even supplied his own bedding, which he took to the laundry each week. He insisted upon paying a generous rent for the little more than a roof over his head. It was a Wednesday evening in July that some hint came that all was not as it should be. It was one of those rare occasions when Eric and I went out to a restaurant together. It was Eric's birthday, and when I asked him what he'd like as a birthday gift, he suggested that we go to a restaurant in a nearby town. We phoned to book a table and took a taxi to arrive at the place at around 7 o'clock. The restaurant was in a country pub, so we sat at the bar for a pre-dinner drink. We'd only been there for about 10 minutes when a sharply dressed young man with an Essex accent approached and greeted Eric like a long-lost brother. "Hey, Trev, what are you doing here? I ain't seen you for a while. Thought you was doing some. How you going?" Eric was visibly shaken, but regained his poise to reply, "Hello, Johnny. Good to see you. Now, I've spent a lot of time abroad. Just looking round the area, I might settle here." Johnny gave one of those "I don't believe you" looks before returning to a table in the corner with a young, brassy-looking blonde girl. "See you around then, Trevor." Eric was visibly disturbed by this encounter. He composed himself to explain that he was known as Trevor to a group of guys from his hometown of Colchester, because another in the group was named Eric. "So, when did he last see you?" I asked. Eric thought for just a split second too long. "Oh, I came back here a couple of times on holiday," he said. I must admit that I found that brief encounter to be a little unnerving. I felt sure that Eric's actions were totally innocent, but his friend Johnny looked and sounded decidedly shady. In August, I decided to take a break in the Lake District and asked Eric if he'd come along with me. I hadn't planned anything specific and certainly felt that I could do with the company, so I welcomed his participation. Having left it late to make a booking, we found that good lakeside hotels were fully booked, but we did eventually secure two rooms in an Ambleside hotel, which were the result of a family cancellation. So Eric grabbed his hold all and we loaded a few essentials into my ancient Skoda and took the M1 and M6 to Cumbria. The hotel was in a wonderful situation overlooking Lake Windermere. The early morning view from my room was down the length of the lake, and it was quite spellbinding. Eric and I spent a good deal of time just walking in the beautiful countryside. This was not an activity that I thought would appeal to Eric, but he seemed to relish it. The weather was uncharacteristically fine throughout, and we adopted a programme of walking in the mornings, stopping for a pub lunch, then following our walker's map back to our hotel for a nap before changing for a hotel dinner and a few drinks. A simple regime, but one of great restorative value. Strolling through these country lanes in the warm summer sunshine while chatting to a friend, I could feel the cares and tribulations of my sedentary life slipping quietly away. I felt, too, that I was now seeing something of the real Eric. Whilst socially his company was always interesting and sometimes positively stimulating, one always had the feeling that this was an expertly crafted facade concealing a deeper and less extrovert personality beneath. But now, in this beautiful pastoral setting, a calmer, gentler, sometimes introspective character was emerging. A character at times seemed vulnerable and insecure, as if on the edge of some great event. We were booked at the hotel until the Sunday morning, but we in fact left on the Friday evening. This was at Eric's request, and in circumstances which seemed decidedly strange, perhaps even sinister. When we returned from our walk on Friday, it was about 5 o'clock. As we passed the reception desk, the clerk said that a man had come to the hotel asking if two men from Rochester were staying. When he learned that they were, he tried to book a room, but none were available. He said that his name was Green. It was at that point that Eric suggested that we leave. He said that Green was a dangerous man to whom he owed money and that it would be wise to avoid him at all costs. I didn't need much persuading here. If Green had tracked Eric to this remote hotel in Cumbria, he must mean business, and I certainly had no desire to get mixed up in it. We booked out and headed for home immediately. In the car, Eric said that since he had obviously been located by Green, we must part company. He thanked me for my hospitality and paid me most generously for accommodating him, then asked me to stop at the lower end of the M1 in the Hendon area. There he got out, wished me well, and promised to collect the rest of his belongings sometime soon. The remainder of my journey home seemed empty and strange. Where was Eric going to evade this Mr. Green? And why? I must admit to being decidedly nervous for a couple of weeks after that incident. Eric said that he'd be in touch, and I half expect him to come and collect the few possessions he'd left in his room, but I heard nothing from him. Presumably whatever was in the locked suitcase was not worth breaking cover for. It was about a month later that my friend Tim phoned me with disturbing news. He'd just seen a photograph of Eric in an evening newspaper. The news item told of his death. His body had been found on a canal towpath. The police had identified him as Eric Carter, also known as Trevor White, and said that his murder showed all the signs of a gangland killing. Police were keen to speak with anyone who knew him. I told Tim that I would be keeping well clear of the affair and advised him to do the same. So, Eric was not going to collect his battered suitcase after all. Battered it may have been, but Opening it took a lot of patience and ultimately brute strength. That was about 3 months ago. A lot of water has flowed under the bridge since then. I finally decided to move away from Kent and the southeast. I've found myself a rather nice house on a couple of acres of land in the West Country. I'd better not be any more specific than that. It's nice to be able to entertain a few friends and have them stay over for a weekend. Nothing better on a warm summer day than to play a couple of sets of tennis with friends and then all cool off in the pool with a few drinks. Life is good.
Eric was written and read by Dave Baldwin. The music, Badass, was from bensound.com.